Good afternoon and welcome to today's presentation. My name is Ivan Galera. I'm a software engineer at IBM. Today I'll be sharing my experience in testing with ESX server in the DMZ. Before we start, how many are facing this problem testing with VMware in the DMZ? Okay, how many have a DMZ? Good. How many are wondering what the DMZ is? Good, okay, so you are in the right place. Good, jokes apart, I'm talking today, actually, I'm giving good news. I'm blowing off my presentation now. It works. You don't have to worry. We'll see, though, some things, what I learned in using ESX in the DMZ, the problems they had, most likely will be the same problems you'll have with your IT department, with your network administrator, with your firewall administrator. So you better start being his best buddy from now if you want to start testing next year. So what we're going to see today, first of course problem definition, why we have a DMZ, what kind of problem we face when we deal with this environment, and how difficult it is for us to use to test in the DMZ. Of course, that's the traditional solution. There is not much different in using VMware. We can see that a twist using VMware, and something that either if you're using VMware or not in the DMZ that can help you and your users to test to have better access basically to systems in the DMZ as if they were in your local lab. And some techniques for doing remote control of your virtual machines in the DMZ through the firewall. But before we start, I want to share with you the experience I have with this. I'm probably, compared to a lot of people I met here, I'm pretty new to the VMware ESX server. I only started using it about less than 2 years ago. Even if I've been using VMware since early 2001. It was good for me last night. I met a gentleman that was facing exactly the same problem that I am. Large application being tested and deployed in the DMZ that needs to be accessible from the internet. And it was good to see that he was facing the same problems that I had. I don't see him here, so probably didn't like too much my speech. But anyway, I was trying to convince people to come to the presentation. Okay, so the idea is, can be your product is being tested, needs to be tested in DMZ. For any reason, you know, you need to be connected to IAM systems outside the world, messaging, anything, you know. Think your application needs to be put in the DMZ. And when he starts talking, you know, okay, you have to put systems, new systems in the DMZ, often for many companies, including mine, it starts to be a problem of the floor space. Okay, how many systems do you have to put there? We don't have space in the rack. You cannot have a rack for yourself. So, of course, as we saw this morning in the general session, VMware allows to consolidate this. This is a good solution for this. So, of course, if you're already familiar with VMware, it makes sense to continue investing in this technology. And then sometimes the requirement of moving the virtual machines, the ESX servers in the DMZ and the needs of your network administrator, not always they match. So there is time, or a certain time of the year when you can move the machines in. Believe me, it happened to a couple of companies I contacted. They have a window and opportunity where they can move hardware into the DMZ. So the fact that if you can use virtualization, well, if you have your two machines and then it happens you need three or four extra VMs, you know, it's just a matter of creating new ones, and if you have enough memory, if you have enough resources, you can do that. I don't think you care about the definition from Wikipedia, since nobody raised their hands. Everybody knows what the DMZ is. Just in case, anyway, let's be clear. It's the area of the network that sits in between two firewalls. On one side, you have the internet, and on the other side, you have your company intranet, so your internal network. What is in between is still your network, But you have to be very careful because there are a lot of bad guys out there. So always keep in mind this during the presentation. You have two levels of separation, two firewalls, because you want to protect the bad guys from coming in. So okay, classic pre-VMware dilemma. We'll talk a bit about that. You have to install a bunch of different machines that, and then it's not very flexible. When you have to copy and install software, you end up either copying files from one system to another, to another, to the system that you have in DMZ, so you can get through the internal firewall. Sometimes I've seen customers that prefer just to transfer files from the internet, which is, in my opinion, a bad solution to the problem. I'm not seeing anything worse. And then, okay, the big problem though, before VMware, if you want to test your application, see before you put it in the DMZ how it will behave, what the problems you have, because once it's there, then it's really hard to deal with it. It was difficult to simulate this before in your lab. So, a practical example. Again, here, what I'm showing you next is just a diagram. The diagrams I'll show you are just examples. They're plugging your network diagram, your application, your need, okay? This presentation is nothing specific about one application, one diagram. So, what we have been testing was we're still testing it now, actually, is an application allows to interconnect the enterprise-level instant messaging that IBM has, Lotus Syntime, to external vendors like AOL, Yahoo, and Google. So I understand this means that then customers, potentially 60 million customers worldwide, will be able to interconnect to the outside world. And you want, of course, that to be tested, to be safe, secure, and at the same time you want to protect your internal network. So this just gives you an idea of the kind of application we need to be testing. The problem dealing with three different external companies, and I mentioned before AOL, Google, and Yahoo, is that from the beginning of the project to almost the end, the requirements, what they need, the ports that needs to be open, the kind of network flow that they need, changes over time, believe it or not, because it's not the production environment that we are testing with them, is the their internal test network. And so having VMware helps a lot in the flexibility. We'll see this in a minute. So this is just to give you an idea. I like this diagram because I show red is really the bad area, the internet. Absolutely, you don't trust anybody coming in from there, of course. That's why you have a first firewall. But still, you still allow some traffic to come in, so you have what I call the yellow area. It's still, you know, don't trust too much, even if it's your network, it's your machines. It's always possible, as doesn't matter how good your administrators are to tighten down the security on the firewall, there's always a chance they could come in. So that's why you still have to treat that the DMZ as the yellow area, as the something to be not scared of, but to be careful with. And then internally, you have your applications, your users, your internal network, and it's possible that, like in this example, a directory, a NLAB directory, is still accessible from the yellow zone, from the server in there. I'm not talking about what the servers in there do. It doesn't matter. For us, it's just servers in the DMZ. Okay, before, of course, it's important to start planning, and I try to make it, kind of joke a little trippy rule. Planning in advance is always a good thing. It will prevent problems later. Of course, you need to schedule time to move the servers, install patches, make them secure, and don't underestimate these. This is a really important step. Depends on your company. The security requirements can be different from a server that is in the internal network versus the one is in the DMZ, the yellow zone we saw before. So make sure that you set up the machine to the standards. You have to tighten security. You have to have certain level of logging and so on. So Your IT department most likely has the answers for that. It's also important that when you plan, you define, okay, my application needs these ports to these machines for this service and needs to be accessible from the outside, either from just for this IP or from everybody. So you have to discuss that with your network administrator and then see what the dependencies are on what it needs to access on the internal network. In the example of the diagram I showed you before, we had an LDAP directory. In my company, the answer was immediately no. And I had to, you know, discuss and see, okay, you can only come in if it's encrypted. Okay, can we do LDAPS or LDAP over SSL? Oh, yeah, okay, as long as, you know, there are some requirements, but okay, it can work. So, but it's important that you have the kind of discussion before you start deploying the application. Most likely, you, if you have a good reason, you get what you want, but most likely you won't get everything you want. So you have to be flexible. This is also very important. I'm not, you saw my diagrams, I'm not good with Visio. I do my best, but that's good enough to show what you're talking about. So you have your table, your ports, your network connections, but also take a picture and show, so make sure that everybody's on the same page. And if somebody else also joins the team later on, they can learn from what you have. Okay, now let's start with the VMware specifics. You're applying the ports that you need for your application, so you know what your application does. Well, you have, there are at least other two ports you have to consider when you make your diagram and you list your requirements. ESX uses port 22, which is this secure shell. It's like an encrypted telnet session, if you want, to the server. And you can have the remote console. It's like going to the ESX server itself and logging in. You can do it remotely with Secure Shell on port 22. So having port 22, it's necessary or good at least to the ESX servers. And we'll see that there is actually a workaround for that. Port 902, it's very important because it's what Virtual Center uses to connect to the ESX server. So, and also the port is used by the VMware remote console. So if you want to get a console out of your virtual machines remotely, you need that port. Whether these ports can be open to expose basically to the internal network, to all the hosts, to all the servers everywhere in your company, it depends on your administrator. My guess is that most likely they will not do that. Most likely will allow eventually only to a certain host within the same building or all the hosts in the building, but not everywhere in the company. Then NFS and FTP and Windows shares should not be used because they're potentially insecure. Not secure. For sure you don't want to be able to mount from inside the DMZ in your internal network, because then, well, where is the security? You have a firewall, if you bypass it for everything, then you don't really have a DMZ. So most likely, your administrator anyway will not let you do that, okay? So that starts to be a problem, how you do transfer files. Well, we'll see that there is a couple of tricks we can do. As I was saying before, it's very important that you document everything from the beginning. You may think that you'll be involved in this project for the next 6, 12, 18 months, who knows, and you'll always be there, but there will be a day when there's a problem and people are debugging. They have to understand, okay, is it because it's a bug in my application? Is it because the firewall is blocking the port? So if you have a documentation, you can go back and see these and these ports were open from this host to in this direction to that server. Then, okay, you can see immediately if it should be allowed, if it's a problem, something changed in the firewall, or something changed in your application. And also it's very good as a handbook for new people that join the project. And also if in case for IBM when there were problems and the developers had to come on the machine, you know, I had just a document I could give to them and they could see immediately everything that was allowed and act you know, as required. Okay, now, it's funny because I spoke with two or three people about this already here, and they all said, well, I have VMware, I can take my console port connected to my internal network and the network cards are used by the VMs only to the DMZ. Think about that. You really want to do that. So if you go to your rental administrator and say, hey, I have my server here. He has four network cards. Can I connect one to the internal network and three to the DMZ? No, you cannot do that. No, wait. It's, you know, it's secure. It's VMware. You know, there is the first port is only used by VMware, not by the machine. So it's, you have a hard time, basically. You can try. It's good for you if you can, but it's not best practice. I'm not here to say try anyway if you can do it, because it's a risk. Even if everybody you can talk to, they say yes, it's not used by, there is an isolation, the other network cards are not used by the host, only used by the VMware kernel, yada, yada, yada. But okay, remember, out there are a lot of bad guys. They probably know more than us altogether. Okay, they are there just to try to find a way to get in. So it's not worth the risk of, you know, losing your bonus, basically, if something goes wrong. So think always that. Keep that in mind, and don't even try. It's not really worth it. So all you need, it's the ports I mentioned before, 22 and 902. Those are your best friends. If you can have those ports open, connect somehow to the ESX server, to your virtual machines, you're a winner. Okay? And of course, if you have strong policies, as I was saying before, not in place, it will help to show that there was no breach in security, nobody was able to come in. Okay. If you remember this morning at the general session, there was a lot of emphasis was put on the virtual appliances. So those are pre-configured machines you can use. And even if I don't have one in particular to suggest to you, because I started creating my own a while ago, before the VMware made the contest, so there were so many published, there actually I've seen that a lot of appliance that I can help in what I'm going to suggest here. If you want to test your application in DMZ before you move it, so you have in your lab, you want to configure there, have the direct access that your lab gives you, you can simply set up a separate network within VMware, so all the VMs on a separate switch, a separate virtual switch, and interconnect them with VMware appliances, runs a simple Linux firewall, and you can see the effect, okay, being on a separate network with a firewall in between, opening certain ports only, and see how your application behaves. That also helps to identify things you forgot to ask about the DMZ, ports that dependencies on servers that you didn't know before. So you can start thinking, okay, if my administrator doesn't let me put have access to my yada 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 server from the DMZ, can then I create an identical one on a VM machine and put it in there? You know, you can make those judgment calls and verify if everything is working as designed. Okay, this is an example of an application layout diagram, you know, whatever you want to call it. Doesn't really matter. Every company has more or less complicated one. I took here one, it is fairly simple. And you know, if you use VMware, you can, yes, that's trivial to create this in VMware. You can, what I want to put the attention on is the firewall. If you have a masquerading firewall, so a network appliance, VMware appliance like the ones that we heard this morning at the general session, then you can start simulating your DMZ in this way. How does it look from a VMware point of view? Okay, you have your ESX server, you create two virtual switches. Okay, you connect the first virtual switch to the production network, to your internal network. The other side connects to the appliance with Linux with a firewall. And then this appliance will have two network cards. The second network card connects to the second switch, and also all the other virtual machines you have will connect to the same switch. By the way, I see that a lot of people are writing notes, taking pictures. I'm glad about that. Just wanted to let you know that, as usual, you always have the material online after the conference. So if you see something here, don't worry if you don't have the time to write it down. There will be somewhere else in a bit. Everything will be available online, including, alas, a recording of this boring presentation. With all the virtual machines that are connected to the same virtual switch, they go through the virtual appliance with Linux running as two network cards, so you can bridge the two networks. It connects to in ESX to the switch that connects to the external network. And here we are. You have your DMZ made with VMware. Of course, it will take a bit of tweaking for the VM on Linux. Probably you have to masquerade and map some internal network SAP addresses to the ones on your VMZ. Sorry, on your VMs. But it's trivial once, of course, it's done once. So that can help really to identify the dependencies. That was the big thing for us when we did that. Like the developers, they wrote an application and forgot to document, oh yeah, there are two or three different ports that we use to connect and they are necessary. So then you can verify, okay, do you need these? Do you really need these ports or can you use the ones you already have? And if you want to do this, my strong suggestion actually from a VMware point of view is to use the same IPs that you will use in the VMZ on the virtual machines. Why? Simply because once you have done testing here, you can move your ESX server or simply migrate the virtual machines to ESX server in the DMZ, and you don't have to change the configuration. It will be ready to go, up and running in a matter of minutes. And I've seen most DMZs where the DNS is available there doesn't know anything about even the machines that are in the DMZ. This normally is done for some kind of security reasons, so we don't expose to hackers the internal, you know, names or anything that could give them an advantage on the system. So in that case, if the case is also from your company, you can pre-populate a host file with all the mapping that you need. And so once you then clone the virtual machine, they will have all the settings that will know about each other. One important aspect that often people tend to forget is, okay, you're moving a new application on DMZ. Don't forget to check with the firewall administrator to see how many concurrent connections the firewall that you have can support or is configured to support. I've seen situations where firewalls can handle a large number of connections, but by default they are set to 16,000, so 16K connections maximum. Maybe a lot, maybe not, depending on your application. In my case, for the instant messaging testing I was doing, we were driving about 100,000 concurrent connections. So we had to tweak the firewall for that. Okay, now the nice part, the part I like the best. What we're going to see here is not really specific to, most of it not specific to VMware. So it will help also if you have traditional solutions in your DMZ. But of course, if you can, you know, you can take advantage of it with VMware too. Okay, I always put the emphasis here on secure. Security is key here. Everything you do in the DMZ, you have always to keep that in mind. Remember, the yellow diagram, you know, you have the red on top, you're on yellow, but still you're very close to the red. So security depends also on how strict your company security requirements are about DMZ. Most likely, if you have a large company, they're very strict. If you're a startup or small home business or medium-sized business, may not have strict requirements. However, I recommend still, you know, to be very careful in what you do. You don't want just to open ports to everybody. And that in mind, you know, you don't want to have unsecure ports, unsecure protocols open like FTP, Telnet, and things like that. By default, ESX has a very secure model, so it doesn't allow FTP and Telnet, which is good. SSH is enabled because it has a good reputation of being secure, and we can use and take advantage of that. Your firewall may have, most likely has SSH allowed to, and probably from there to your internal network to the DMZ, which is also good, and we'll be using that. But most likely, controlling machines, so VNC, which uses port 5900 and over, and RDP, which is the Microsoft Windows Remote Desktop Protocol, also known as Terminal Services, which uses port 3389, most likely is disabled. You cannot go through your firewall with those. RDP, well, it's the way it is. VNC is because it's by default is not, most flavors of VNC are not encrypted or not are not secure. So by default, those should be disabled. If you have port 902 open, okay, you can, on the intranet facing firewall, you can probably use the VMware remote console to control your virtual machines. But how many of you use that and are happy with the performance of it? Well, what happened for me when I wasn't happy with the performance before. In my lab, being on my local network, when going through the firewall, I will lose connection very often. So if there is a connection lost, the VMware remote console closes. So it's not very nice. So I need to find something better. So let's see what we can do to improve the access. Well, VPN without VPN. I don't even know how to call it. Basically, it's tunneling. What you can do, if you have SSH, so you can SSH of this secure channel you can open to your firewall. And I say firewall, but it can also be a Linux or Unix server that is trusted by the firewall to connect to the internal DMZ network. So you follow me. You have here your internal network, okay? You have the firewall. There is a machine on your internal network that is trusted by the firewall, so when it connects to the DMZ, the firewall can let it go through on port 22. Normally, that's what happens. Most companies, they will have some kind of Linux or Unix, you know, AX or Solaris machine that can do that. Because SSH, again, is secure. It allows you to get a connection to the inside world. That's really good. It's encrypted, it's secure, and you can tunnel over it. If you don't know what tunneling is, I have the definition from Wikipedia. Is a transmission of one computer network protocol that is encapsulated inside another network protocol. So what that means is that we can take our remote control protocol that we choose, make it go over SSH, to go over the firewall and connect to the machine inside the DMZ. The advantage of that, it's speed and simplicity for end users. So, and it's free. So I don't think you can get anything better than that. Okay, how does it work? I told you we have three, URLs. You'll find those in the presentation material when you get the presentation once you're back in your office. There are different solutions for tunneling SSH. The one I like and I suggest is PuTTY, which is a free telnet/SSH program. Available for Windows, and that has a built-in capability in the latest releases to support tunneling. So, and tunneling you can do it for RDP and for VNC. So RDP is the more best protocol, and I'll be focusing on RDP because it's, well, I guess it's most of us are using Windows machines from what I checked. Even if you're on DMZ, normally you try to have either Unix or Linux, but when it comes down to testing and development, often you have Windows. Again, if you have VNC, there are URLs that explain how to do that very easily too. So how the tunneling works. On the left-hand side, you have your laptop. That's you in your office. And you open an SSH connection over port 22 to your firewall. And again, I say firewall here for simplicity. It could be the machine that is trusted to go through the firewall on port 22. Okay, so firewall on the right now is the shortcut. Okay, so the firewall gets the connection over port 22, and it redirects it internally over port 3389. So it allows the connection to go in your inside network. So you see, it gets to the firewall on port 22, and it gets de-encapsulated. It goes inside, connects to your virtual machines, and your virtual machine sees a normal remote desktop, so a terminal service connection coming in. So it's totally transparent for your virtual machine. And this is good news. It means you don't have to install anything new on the virtual machines. You don't have a new piece of software to maintain. Any piece of software you have in a virtual machine or a server in the DMZ, it means that in theory you should spend 5 minutes per piece of software per virtual machine to verify every week that it's secure, is up to standards, there are no known attacks that can be done, and so on and so forth. So the fact you're not putting anything new on your virtual machine inside the DMZ is a good thing. Okay? So let's see how we do that with PuTTY. Okay. Are you familiar with PuTTY? Good. So what you can do here, you select SSH as the protocol, port 22, you put the host name of your firewall, or the machine is allowed to go through the firewall, okay? And in the save session, you can save a name, you can click the button save later. You go first in the, I didn't show you, but on the bottom you see there is the tunnels that is selected, and you can enter in the list of ports, source ports that your local machine will be listening on. So you can say, okay, I can tunnel and I create a temporary port on my local machine. Pick a number, 3390, because that number normally is not used. And you say, when I connect on this port, locally 3390, redirect me to the port I have there. So I say virtual machine A in DMZ.com on port 3389. 3389 is the magic number for RDP. So what happens? We open 3390 on my machine. I connect with a remote desktop over 3390 instead of 3389. SSH, in this case, PuTTY, it redirects me to the firewall, and the firewall knows that it has to send me to that virtual machine over port 3389. It seems complicated. Actually, it isn't until you start using it. It seems convoluted here, but if you have time when you get back home in your office and you try, and you start saying, hey, I can use that for many other things. And actually, you do. Now, you can share your... Once you create the profile, if you list all of your machines, virtual machines you have in the DMZ, you create a list of all the ports and connection you have to use, then you can export the profile. The problem with PuTTY is that it saves in the Windows registry. So you have to go with the regedit to that key, export it to a reg file, and then you can share with your colleagues. So then anybody needs to start testing it. They just run that reg file once, it's registered, they start PuTTY, they load the session, authenticate with the firewall, and then they have all the tunneling sessions ready to go. So they can just start the remote desktop session, and you created a cheat sheet that has, you know, when you want to connect to this VM, type these in remote desktop. So they type 127.0.0.1, which is the local host, colon 3390, so the port that we created before, and that will redirect and connect you to your machines inside the DMZ. So the advantage here is that you do only one login to the firewall, and then I have about 30-something machines, virtual machines listed in my environment, and by just changing the number of the port here in remote desktop, I can connect to one or the other, and I don't have to authenticate anymore with the firewall. So in my case, I authenticate once in the morning, I can work all day long with the virtual machines inside my network, and it's totally transparent and it's fast. And we'll see there is another trick. Compared to using VMware Remote Desk, Remote Console, sorry, this is about 5 to 10 times faster. You know, if you use the compare before, you see it. Second advantage is that because you're connecting user remote desktop, so you can have multiple sessions on the same virtual machine. So different people can do different things at the same time. You're not fighting to have control over the mouse. Okay, I know that this is a very technical conference, so there are people that don't want to use any GUI. So everything has to be done with the command line. It's possible. You have OpenSSH. If you're a Linux guy, you know, you already know it. It's available. You can also install it on Windows. You can, but I don't recommend it. Why? Because on the port on Windows, at least the most common one is Cygwin, there is a bug, there is a discussion that's been going on for quite a long time in the news groups about a performance problem in the implementation of OpenSSH that shows in this case when you're doing transfer and tunnelings. So it works, it's good. The only problem with this is that for every session you have to authenticate, so you run basically the command multiple times for every port you want to open. And also I found it's about 5 to 6 times slower than using PuTTY. Yoko. Okay? You can also tunnel the VMware console, which is good. So imagine if you're network administrator, you don't want to open port 902 for you, or only open it for the Los Angeles office, but now you're in New York and you cannot connect to the through the internal network and go through the firewall on port 902, how you can get to the VMware console? Sometimes you need to have that. Well, you can do the same. You can tunnel the open a connection tunnel port 902 over SSH through the firewall, connecting this time to your ESX server. So then once you have this tunneling open with PuTTY, it basically is identical to what we saw before. You change, when you open the remote console, instead of having the host name of the server, you put localhost. Instead of the port 902 by default, you put the port that you selected for the tunneling. In my case, I put 903 for simplicity. Always do one port higher. It's easier for me to remember. Okay, let's see how it looks in PuTTY. So basically, it's the same as we did before. We put 903 as the listening port, and we have destination server is the VMware ESX in dmz.com on port 902. And here is how we entered the, we changed basically the URL to point to the local host and the port that we put in PuTTY. So once we match that, we connect, and the connection will be made magically for you too, the same way as it can be done with RDP. Okay. Now we can connect with fast connection. We bypass the firewall, so we don't have to have a machine in between. You know, normally what happens, you would have eventually, if you're lucky, a machine where you can RDP to, and then from there you have to SSH over in VNC to the machines inside, or you have to RDP from there to the DMZ. Some people told me even they have to do 3 hops before they can get to the DMZ. So we solve one problem now. Okay, can we solve also the problem of transferring files? Well, if you can RDP to your machines, if you have Windows 2003 on your virtual machines, yes, there is a solution. If you open the options of the remote desktop connection and you go in this, in the third tab, the local resources, you can check the disk drives. What that does, once you connect through SSH, you know, you go through the DMZ to your virtual machines in the DMZ, you will be showing to the virtual machines over there your local resources. So if you have your C drive, your CD-ROM, your network drives that you mounted, they will be available to the machine inside the DMZ for the time of the session, the remote session. So as long as you are connected, your local drives will be available there. That's good because you can go in, if you go on my computer, for example, you'll see underneath the list of the local drives, your local drives, the drives of your laptop on the virtual machine, imagine DMZ. So if you can start navigate, you'll have something like that. /\\ TS client for terminal services client, /C is my laptop C drive, and then you can start navigating, and you can select the drag and drop of folders and files, and it's pretty fast. You know, even if you're going over an SSH encrypted connection, and that's where it shows the difference between PuTTY and OpenSSH. With PuTTY, I'm able to transfer about, I've seen up to 6 to 8 megabytes per second. Over an encrypted connection, it's not bad. It's pretty good. With OpenSSH, I was at 1/10 of the speed. Most, I would see 600 kilobytes. So sometimes when I transfer a new build to install, it's 380 megabytes and it's done in less than 6 minutes. So it's, you know, it's not top speed, it's not 100 megabit network, but it's pretty good. Okay, now I want to, now that you know how to tunnel, okay, you think, well, if I can tunnel from my network inside, can I do the other way around? No, don't. Why? Well, because if you tunnel the other way around, then there is a way from the inside network to get to your, from the DMZ to get to your internal network. That's what the firewall is there for, to prevent that. So you don't want to do that. You don't want to open, you don't want to expose anything like that. So it's a big no sign there, okay? So that means also that don't think to use that about mounting storage over firewalls or things like that. It's not good. If you need to have access for directories, LDAP is a classical example. Talk to your administrator. Most likely they can give you a NAT address that translates to the address inside your internal network to the server, so they can allow traffic on 636, for example, for encrypted LDAP from the DMZ, from the host that you specify, to your directory inside the network. You don't want to open otherwise other holes. Okay, we're almost done. Okay, what about virtual center? Well, if you are able to do port 902 from the virtual center to the DMZ, you're all set. Well, almost all set. If you don't, you should try to ask to open, at least for the ESX servers, that port from the VC from the virtual center server, so it simplifies your work. However, it's now with VI3, licensing starts to be a problem, because normally your VC server is also your licensing server. It doesn't have to, but it can be. If this ESX server cannot connect to it from the DMZ, then it cannot get the license. Right, your VC may connect to it, but the other way it's not true. Remember what we saw before? So what do you do? Well, a couple of options. I checked with the some VMware gurus, and they said, well, either you can install the VC in the DMZ, but then you lose the flexibility you have, or you export the license file from the virtual center and put it on the ESX servers in the DMZ, which basically then will remove a little flexibility that you have with VC, but that's the kind of two problems that you have. However, good news is that if you have port 902 open from VC, then you can also clone and migrate your machines from internal network to the DMZ. That's all it needs. Security requirements for virtual machines. These are nothing different than what you would do if they were physical machines. Okay, so whatever your company requires, you do it. The good thing about VMware is that if you make one virtual image of plain vanilla OS, you install all the patches, your antivirus, you know, usual stuff you do already. You make it secure, you apply all the lockdown scripts that can exist in the market, you know, that your company has to prevent certain services from running or as additional security features enable, then you can use that to deploy. Yeah, give an example here, you know, you want to have a password policies and lockdowns and things like that, but it really depends on what is the requirement of your company. Listing everything you can do on a virtual machine on OS, it's probably a day worth of talking, so it was beyond what I had time here. As I was saying before, if you have port 902 open from VC to the internal network, to the EMZ actually, then you can use that to deploy your virtual machines in the DMZ. Be careful now when you plan where you're going to store your virtual machines. If you're in the DMZ, unless you have a SAN there, good for you, most likely you only can rely on local storage. I don't think it's a good idea, best practice or anything to have anything that goes from the DMZ to the internal network. Even if sometimes, you know, just side by side, I don't think it's really a good idea. It's against all best practices. You really want to have an isolation of the environments. And about the host files, we saw that before. So, summary, we are at the end now. As we said, plan in advance. That makes, you know, it's all common sense. Nothing new, but document, be rigorous. I know you already have because that's your job, but especially for these, you'll be new problems. The firewall will be preventing you from doing a lot of stuff. So if you know who's causing your problems, who's causing your troubles, if you can document and go back to the administrator saying, hey, you said you were going to open this port, it's not working. You know, it helps. It will make things easier later, especially if you have to debug, you have to troubleshoot, if you have to even hand out the infrastructure to somebody else to continue to work to do some QA testing on it, for example. Being flexible, of course, is necessary. Don't see the firewall administrator as your enemy. He's there to do his job too, so he has to make sure that your company's network is secure. And remember that tunneling is really your only friend. So if I know it's hard to understand at the beginning how that can work. It's magical, don't worry. You know, it's one of the little things in the industry. You really use the IBM Blue Dust. And I don't know if you remember the commercial a couple of years ago. Anyway, if you can learn it, there are URLs that I posted that have discussion on how to use it. But if you Google, if you have a specific protocol you have to tunnel, yes, you can do that too. If it's TCP, you know, you can. And then you can really try it, and you'll see it will work for you. I see we have about 10 minutes for questions. Yes? So the question is, if the administrator disabled RDP through the firewall, on the VMware machine, is there another way for transferring files? Yes, there is. You can, there is the secure copy. So if you have, let's say if you have a firewall or machine, a Linux machine, it is trusted in between the internal network, you can do a secure copy from your machine to this intermediate machine, and then from there to your other host. Secure copy is a standard SCP is the command, and there is also a Windows interface which is pretty nice and easy to use. Is winscp.sourceforge.net. But if you Google on anything, even tunneling and RDP or tunneling and whatever, you'll find a lot of information. And I'm sorry?
SCP-3.
Yeah, there are really several free ports of SCP. And even if you install the OpenSSH, you have the command line, which is pretty handy too. But the only problem, as I mentioned before, is the throughput of it, which is not exceptional on Windows. But if you use WinSCP or FreeSCP, they perform better. Yes?
I read somewhere where the 902 port can be changed. Is there merit to the idea of changing it to 22?
No, you cannot change it to 22 because it's already in use by SSH. Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, you can. You could. But if I don't see why you need to change in the 902. Okay, it's possible. There are a couple of places where you can run the configuration of ESX where you can change the default port from 902 to something else. But for connectivity issues from the internal network to the DNZ, if you can tunnel through SSH, then you don't need to change it. The case when you want to change it is if you absolutely need to have it for virtual center to connect to your machine inside the DMZ, but you don't want to tunnel in that case, which makes sense. And you know there is another port that is not used that your administrator allows. For example, 80 is not being used, and you can redirect through that, you know, make sure that the web server on ESX is not listening anymore on port 18 but only on 443, then yes, you can use it. You can remap it that way. That's another trick. Yes. Yes?
Would your firewall administrator lay open port 22 for anybody inside the green area? Just open one or two?
Okay, the question is port 22 open for all hosts on the internal network to the DMZ, or only for selected hosts? And because we're connecting to a machine, it is trusted by the firewall to connect to the internal network, so to the DMZ, from the internal network, okay? So that has nothing to do with the firewall. It's just a connection to this machine. So it's up to this machine to be secured in a way that's only accessible from the internal network. So if you can go to port 22 on these, most likely what I've seen in most customers is that you are allowed to connect from anywhere in the company to that machine, and from there, if you have an account, of course, on that machine, to go to the DMZ, and which is normal practice, and which is then the beauty of SSH, because you can tunnel, you can do anything you want. On the diagram, when I showed the configuration with Patty, on the host we put is the firewall. The machine is trusted by the firewall. You need to have a personal or a shared account on that machine. If you cannot log in to that machine, then you're not able to tunnel through it. So most likely your company will have some procedure in place where you can ask for an account, justify why you need an account on that machine. But it should be normal practice that that can be provided if you have to test in the DMZ. Does this answer your question?
I guess the trusted machine is inside the intranet.
Yes.
And I have to have an account on that one. That's the only one allowed through the firewall.
Correct, yes.
So the firewall is only penetrated by port 22 on this trusted host.
That's right.
2 or 3, but not 30 or 50 or 100.
Correct. Yes. In fact, yes, that's a good point. You want to have a very limited number of machines that are trusted by the firewall, because the machines that are trusted because they're deemed secured, and they are secure only if they are checked to be so. So you don't want them to have to check all of your laptops in your office, of course. So it's better and easier if you just have one or two selected machines that allow the kind of connection through the firewall. Yes?
You said that you had a concern about having your ESX host on your internal secure network and then your DMZ being are you hosting VMs for your DMZ via that host? Is that
that based on punch or engine? Possibly a hacker could bridge?
It's possible. You know, I haven't found any report of any successful overflow that was done, hack, attack, whatever you want to call it. You know, that shows that there is a breach in that. But the fact that you don't know doesn't mean it doesn't exist. You know, it may not be possible, but there is a, because if you think it's the same machine, you know, its hardware is the same, even if the software is doing a good separation, and you know, you can when you talk about DMZ, you really talk about physical separation. That's why you have two firewalls. You know, you don't just put a firewall on a Windows machine and hope that, you know, does the routing correctly, and it's you want to be really secure. That's why normally your administrator will say a big no about that. Of course, I tried when I wanted to simplify the installation at the beginning. At least I said, while I'm doing the setup, can I have that? And I said, oh no, no way. You know, it makes sense. If you think about that, you know, if there is a breach in security, it's their job that is in jeopardy. So they have to protect that too. So even if anybody here in this conference say, oh no, it's secure and everything, and I agree with them, it's not best practice.
As an SE for VMware, I would suggest there's another problem you have, and that's if the administrator of the SXBox can do an oh shit, if you will, and go across your F5 firewall. So if I can go in and now put that there anywhere I want, because I'm the administrator of ESX, right? I become the security problem, not whether our software is secure. It's not the issue of whether we didn't build it right. It's possible for a non-network firewall administrator to violate the security.
Exactly, and this is a perfect answer, because the weakest link is always the human. You know, the person that can make a mistake. So that's a very good point. So don't even give that possibility. Keep always physical separations. Don't allow anything to be broken, or give a free pass to access to your company network. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.